from which there was no turning back.
Okay, then. I know a place where we can find some of the things you need.
The four outlanders looked at each other with hopeful expressions, the first they'd had since Ryan and the women had been abducted. And in that moment, no one seemed to notice that Shiva had mysteriously disappeared back into the forest from where she had come. The crew broke for lunch, which was served in the orchard off the back of a rebuilt electric wag that had burners and coolers and all sorts of things to help prepare food and keep it hot or cold as required. Ryan was given the choice of vegetable soup or some sort of meat stew. He decided on the soup, since he knew that the vegetables were grown on the farm, but he couldn't be sure where the meat for the stew had come from. The man in the greasy clothes behind the food counter spooned out the soup into Ryan's oversized mug and put a large bread roll on the tray beside it. Farther along, an overripe tomato was put on his tray and finally an empty glass, which could be filled with water from one of the spouts that extended off the end of the wag. Ryan filled his glass, drank, and then filled it again. He then turned to locate Mildred. He found her sitting in the shade under one of the peach trees, eating the stew. Ryan joined her.
How's the food?
Not bad for prison grub.
My back's killing me. How's yours?
Ryan leaned backward to ease the pain in his lower back. He was in terrific physical shape, and his muscles were as taut as iron bands, but nothing could have prepared him for hours of being hunched over and looking for weeds. He'd get used to the work eventually, but he wasn't planning on being there long enough for that.
It's been better. God, I wish JB would get here soon.
Ryan sat beside Mildred and began to eat. The soup was as good as any he'd tasted. When he was done eating it, he broke his roll into chunks and used it to soak up the broth. When he was about to bite into his tomato, the woman with the scraggly hair, whose name was Jasmine, sat in front of Mildred and Ryan.
I don't think Purvis likes you very much.
Is that his name? Purvis?
Yes, Andy Purvis. He's the leader of our crew.
Not much of a leader, if you ask me.
I don't think he's going to forget what happened today. Be careful tonight. He'll be looking for you.
Why? What's going to happen tonight?
We'll work the fields until a few hours before sundown, until the white wags come out to bring us back to the main house. In back of the main building, we'll be able to wash ourselves and freshen up. Then we all go to the dining hall for dinner, which will probably be soup and stew again.
Ryan nodded, wondering if he should try the stew now to see what he'd be in store for tonight.
After dinner, there'll be some sort of entertainment on the dining hall stage.
Entertainment?
Mildred's eyes widened.
What kind of entertainment?
You know, like in a gaudy house. Someone might do a strip dance. Sometimes the Baron comes out and tells a few funnies. And one time he showed us a pre-dark sex vid. That was interesting.
And you have these sorts of shows every night?
She looked at Mildred as if she had just asked a silly question.
Of course.
Why?
It's supposed to put everyone in the mood to rut.
And does it?
Yes, after the shows, everyone who wants to rut pairs up. Or you can go to the big room where a lot of people get together at one time.
Ryan and Mildred exchanged incredulous glances.
What if you don't want to rut?
If it's your time, like you said, no one will bother you. Or if you're not feeling well, you can take a room by yourself. Some people prefer that.
Sounds like we're going to have an interesting night in store for us.
Mildred furrowed her brow.
Interesting is a good word for it.
Anyway, if Purvis is going to try anything, it will probably be in the showers or during the entertainment.
Thanks for the warning. But why are you telling me this?
Her eyes darted left to right, and she moved her head ever so slightly to see if anyone was near.
I don't like him. I don't like him at all.
Hey, child, what's not to like? A sadist with delusions of grandeur who beats up on women?
Jasmine didn't seem to register Mildred's sarcasm.
No, he's dangerous. If he thinks you're a threat to his position as alpha male on the crew, he'll try and chill you any way he can.
What about the sec men?
Ryan turned his head in the direction of the guards, who were all sitting on folding chairs that had come off the wag. They seemed unconcerned about the crew under their charge.
They don't care about the men. It's the women who are valuable to the Baron. Anyone hurts a woman, especially a breeder, they're chilled on the spot. Purvis is hard on the women in his crew, but none of us has ever stopped breeding because of it.
A prince among men.
There's some worse overseers in other crews, but not many.
Just then, Sekhman Cauterer blew a whistle to let them know it was time to get back to picking fruit and pulling weeds.
Just be careful, mister. He'll chill you if he has a chance.
Ryan got to his feet.
Not if I chill him first.
That put a smile on the woman's face.
I was sort of hoping that might be the case. You look like you've chilled people before. I bet you have, haven't you?
Ryan grinned and winked at the woman.
One or two.
Shiva, the Skydark spawn, continued to watch her friend Clarissa conversing with the Outlanders, even after she had withdrawn to a distance from the human sight, and her databanks began recalling how she had arrived at this point in her existence. She had been created in a lab over 100 years ago, the construct of the Predark scientists of Project Shiva, from which she would eventually take her name. The 50 scientists who made up the operation, now long deceased, had been the only human beings with the knowledge of the true origins of Skydark, why it had happened, and who was responsible. Information that was now, unfortunately, lost to her. Project Shiva was one of the last American scientific projects before Skydark. However, it was a project that the government and the military knew nothing about, since in the few years before Skydark, those institutions had been too busy with the political infighting with Russia that would inevitably lead to the nuke cost. Too busy, it seemed, to see the forest for the trees. If only they had realized the truth earlier, they could have created her in time to stop the nuke cost before the enemy had the chance to carry out their plan. But it was not to be. They were too late, and anyway, it was a foolish notion to dwell on what could have been. What mattered was now. She had been created to destroy the enemy at all costs. She was a weapon, a tool, an amoeboid mass with the ability to camouflage herself into any living thing she touched at the molecular level. But she was also programmed with what the Predark scientists called AI. She wasn't just a mindless automaton. She could think and reason for herself and adapt to survive. She was the pinnacle of human technological know-how and expertise, but in the end, it proved futile. Upon her information download from the human designated as J.B. Dix, she determined that he was under the mistaken impression that the escape redoubt leading to Canada was built for a general or political bigwig to leave America before the nuke cost hit. However, it wasn't built for that reason or for any other military or government purpose. It had been built for her to escape the nuke cost and the enemy's grasp until she could determine where they were and hunt them down. But that was over a century ago. Although she was programmed to live at least that long, she was unprepared for the unintended consequences of the matter transfer jump. Even the scientists of Project Shiva had never used them before, and were unaware of the stress and strain the device exhibited on human frames. For her, it was even worse. She was both life form and machine, her artificial nanobot molecules in a constant flux, and the living part of her lost consciousness while the machine part overloaded not long after exiting from the redoubt. Fortunately for her, she remained untouched over the century by human or animal hand until several years ago when a roving band of the canine muties came across her. Although severely damaged, her survival backup program still had some energy left. She was able to touch one of the muties and assume its form. With their limited intelligence, they believed that Shiva was some kind of demigod and carried her back to their lair, which happened to be the underground storage facility of a pre-dark museum, filled with all sorts of electronics and machinery untouched since Skydark. Once there, her survival backups utilized the tech they could find and were able to repair Shiva with a completeness ratio of 68.235%. It wasn't good enough. Her original directives had been lost to the damage. She now had no information as to who the enemy was or how to find them. And it was 100 years too late anyway. America was gone, and the Deathlands were what was left. But most disastrous of all was that she was coming to the end of her operational lifetime of 112.4 years, after which her processors would cease to function, and she would be, for all intents and purposes, dead. So she decided, with the small amount of time she had left, that she would continue to gather information and observe her surroundings in disguise until someone came along who could perhaps hold the answers she sought to resume her mission. So far, it was proving to be a lost cause. Other than her meeting with the girl Clarissa less than a year ago, the only other